This is Enemy Combatant Radio on Pirate Cat 87.9 FM. And this is a brand new show coming at you every Monday from 7 to 8 p.m. So stay tuned for the next hour, and also tune in next Monday for news from indie media. Brought to you by In the studio tonight, we have yours truly, Mark, and we also have
Heather.
Gubbins, hi.
And Ali is here as well, but he may be taking off. So, here you go.
I just told that we shouldn't use this computer for anything.
All right. Luckily, we have all of our headlines on plain paper, so we're going to be doing the show kind of without too much computerized assistance tonight. Next week we'll probably be back in our regular Enemy Combatant Radio studio, which is a little more spacious. It's not quite so cramped. But let's get rolling with the headlines. In international headlines for today, the U.S. military has been bragging of killing over 1,200 people in Fallujah since the assault was launched late last week. The U.S. has already claimed victory, but it is not clear what this victory means, since rebels continue to resist in Fallujah and many more have escaped and are fighting the U.S. troops in other cities across Iraq. U.S. military chiefs claim that there are no civilians left alive in Fallujah to receive aid from the Red Crescent, and so they have continued to refuse to let the Red Crescent trucks through the U.S. military barricades. Reporters and refugees describe a situation of utter devastation. Bodies lie in the streets, homes and mosques lie in ruins, and power lines and telephone lines are down. An AP reporter who wanted to stay in Fallujah to cover the U.S. attack describes dodging gunfire as he tried to reach the river to escape when it became apparent that no one in Fallujah was safe. He decided to swim but changed his mind after seeing U.S. helicopters firing on and killing civilians who tried to cross the river. The reporter watched horrified as a family of five was shot dead as they tried to cross. Then he helped bury a man by the riverbank with his own hands. A Fallujah refugee interviewed by Dar Jamal described horrific scenes in the city, houses that had been razed by countless U.S. airstrikes, and the stench of decaying bodies. Many people could not leave because they had nowhere to go and no money. Jamal writes today that dogs were eating bodies in the streets of Fallujah, so we'll never know how many perished in the assault. The UK Guardian reports that fallout from the week-long assault on the city has spread to towns across the country. U.S. forces clashed with crowds of resistance fighters in the streets of Baghdad, Ramadi, Bariz, Mosul, Sawaria, and Bukuba, a mixed Sunni and Shia town north of Baghdad. Amnesty International has called for an investigation into the bombing of a Fallujah clinic on November 9th, which killed 20 doctors and dozens of civilians.
Black Box Voting, an electronic voting activism group, has launched an election fraud audit in Florida. Three Black Box investigators, Bev Harris, Andy Stevenson, and Kathleen Wine, are working in Florida right now. They're initiating hand counts on selected counties that have not fully complied with the November 2nd Freedom of Information request, either today for counties using Diebold electronic voting equipment or tomorrow for other counties. Both David Cobb of the Green Party and Michael Badnarik of the Libertarian Party will be filing for official recounts in Ohio, along with another fraud audit by Black Box Voting.
Haitian Prime Minister Gerard Latorte said on Friday that he had ordered his justice minister to obtain an arrest warrant on corruption charges against ousted president Jean-Bertrand Aristide. Latorte was installed as the head of an interim government after the bloody rebellion that, with US assistance, forced Aristide into exile in February. Aristide was elected for the second time in 2000, but then accused of despotism and corruption and forced into exile after a revolt by former soldiers and death squads. under pressure from the United States and France. Latorte and other Haitian officials have publicly accused Aristide of corruption, but no charges have been filed and no evidence made public. Aristide, a former Roman Catholic priest, remained hugely popular among many of Haiti's poorest citizens.
In Paraguay, police violently dislocated a group of rural farmers on November 4th who were occupying land in the department of San Pedro. One farmer, Aurelio Espinosa, 55 years of age, was killed, and 30 others were detained. This type of confrontation has occurred in various departments in the country. Typically, farmers and their families have been sent to prison where they have experienced inhumane conditions and treatment. In just 3 years, the Paraguayan government has expelled more than 100,000 farmers from their lands in the implementation of monoagricultural programs to cultivate genetically modified wheat, soy, and corn. These farmers are joining the growing number of families in Paraguay without land, now more than 400,000. The government of Nicanor Duarte, following the footsteps of past governments, has promised lands to the farmers, but has not followed through on this. He has publicly acknowledged that there are 13 million hectares, or over 32 million acres, of ill-gotten land, and that 90% of that land is in the hands of 2% of the population of Paraguay. And we'll turn now to local headlines.
On November 5th, the Oakland Police Department agreed to enact a crowd control policy prohibiting the use of less lethal weapons. These include such weapons as the pepper spray round that recently killed a woman in Boston when it penetrated her eyeball and skull. Michael Haddad, a civil rights lawyer who helped to implement the guidelines, says the new protections for the right to assemble are important because prior to this, the OPD had no policy. Their policy was anything goes. The new policy was inspired by the incident on April 7, 2003, when police fired wooden bullets, string ball grenades, and shot-filled beanbag bags at hundreds of peaceful anti-war demonstrators at the Port of Oakland. The new policy doesn't resolve claims for monetary damages by those who were injured as a result of the police action. Federal District Court Judge Felton Henderson has scheduled these claims for trial in January 2006.
The Barrington Collective hosted the 5th DIY or Do It Yourself Festival on November the 13th and 14th. On Saturday, workshops, community tables, and live performances were held at People's Park in Berkeley. On Sunday, there were workshops in a variety of locations, such as a cob oven workshop at a Berkeley community garden.
All right, that's the headlines from Indie Media. You can check out more news at indiebay.org. And we're going to jump over to some other reports that we've received at the Indie Media site. Of course, you can publish to any Indie Media site, indiebay.org or radio.indiemedia.org, which is an international radio website with links to programs and community radio stations around the world. So stay tuned.
The Indie Media Network announces the launch of a new and indispensable website for gathering the news and views of ordinary people across the country and around the world. With its mission of publishing independent, on-the-ground reports from the people who experience the news most directly, IndieMedia.us will amplify the voices of the most directly impacted not only by the election process, but by the policies of either a Bush or Kerry administration. Indie Media has changed the face of journalism through its creative and comprehensive coverage from the front lines of the struggle for social justice throughout the world, says Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With its vast network of unembedded journalists throughout the country, U.S. will become a weapon in the fight for truth about what happens on November 2nd and beyond. The U.S. IMC website syndicates the news wires of over 50 local U.S. independent media centers within the network of 165 IMCs around the world. Indie Media is a grassroots network committed to using media production and distribution as a tool for promoting social justice and economic justice. It is dedicated to addressing issues that the mainstream media neglect and hopes to empower people to become the media by providing democratic access to available technologies and information. You can visit us at indiemedia.us.
Chapter 11. If anyone tries to harm them, fire flashes from the mouths of the prophets and consumes their enemies.
We will rid the world of the evildoers. We've never seen this kind of evil before.
And the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
Alright, this is Enemy Combatant Radio on Pirate Cat 87.9 FM. And we have some reports from Indie Media that we're going to be bringing to you now. Some of these are local stories, or most of them are local stories. And they're also available online, so you can check out videos and photos of some of these stories online. So I guess Heather's going to get us going here.
On Tuesday, November 9th, people across California, including San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Santa Cruz, protested the U.S. attack on Fallujah. Thousands marched in San Francisco, and two armored tanks were called out into the streets of L.A. to suppress the anti-war demo there. Freak Radio Santa Cruz spoke with protesters at UC Santa Cruz.
¿Cómo te llamas?
Me llamo Omar.
¿Por qué estás aquí ahora?
Ah, porque me urge, la cosa que están diciendo acá de que quieren más trabajos y no más guerra, eso es muy importante.
¿Eres una trabajadora?
Sí, soy un trabajador y pues me gustaría triunfar y yo pienso que la guerra detiene más las cosas cuando uno quiere triunfar.
¿Y dónde trabajas?
Yo trabajo en construcción, pero tengo planes para abrir un negocio o algo así en el futuro. My girlfriend, she started right here. Uh-huh. And I speak a little English. You can ask me in English if you want to. But I understand this sign. That's why, you know, I standing right here with this guy, you know, share everything. And I say, okay, this sign is for me. You know, I want a more job in the future. That's why I'm standing right here.
How do you feel about the reaction that people are giving you?
People say, you know, I'm you know, I bought care. I can vote, you know, but I say, if this I say, no more war. More job and everything. I like that, too, you know. And I don't like war either. And because I don't like when people kill and, you know, uno a otro, that's not good, you know, because I'm a Christian and I understand, you know, God say, you know, sometimes you don't have to kill somebody, you have to be in peace.
It makes sense to me.
Yeah, I hope so in the future, you know, everything is gonna be all right.
Gracias por tu tiempo.
Gracias a ti también.
Why are you here today?
I'm here to protest what's going on in Fallujah, the American presence in Iraq, and just for peace.
Have you protested against this war before?
This is my first physical protest. I've done petitions and, you know, education stuff, but this is my first, like, coming out actual protest. So I'm excited.
What made you come out today to protest?
Because, well, the opportunity presented itself. And after the election and after nothing, like, it's just getting progressively worse and worse. And I figured if I don't do something, no one's going to do anything. So I decided today was the day.
You were also mentioning that you saw Free Radio Santa Cruz get busted. You saw the coverage on Democracy Now. How did that make you feel? Had you been a supporter of Free Radio Santa Cruz?
I'd never listened to them, but just the idea of uncorporate radio and having free independent media is something I strongly support. And to see the FCC marshals with, like, their guns raid this house was ridiculous. It had me so angry that free media doesn't even exist anymore.
And how about here at UCSC? What do you see the opportunity to do What message would you want to get out to your fellow students?
As college students, we have so many opportunities that if we can just take advantage of what we have in front of us, we can make... this world. And so we just have to get active and start finding our passions and getting involved with things and not taking advantage of the privileges that we have as students.
Which ways are you getting involved?
Personally, like for myself, through arts. We have an organization, Guerrilla Music Project, where we do social activism through artists, musicians, like open mics, that kind of way to get our mess, you know, to allow people an outlet to get their messages out. Protests, signing petitions, you know, passing along informative emails. There's like so many little things that we can do that are so easy.
Tell me more about the Guerrilla Music Project. Where are the performances taking place?
It's a community-based, Santa Cruz-based organization out of UCSC. We have performances all the time. We do like a monthly open mic. Our next open mic is on the 30th. It's called Soul, which is Songs of Unity and Love, which is what that stands for. But we do, you know, spoken word, poetry, everything. And if that's something anyone's interested in, we meet Monday nights at 10 o'clock at Baytree Conference Rooms.
And where's that next event going to be taking place?
Location to be announced, but definitely there will be flyers and information out there. So check us out or email us at guerrillamusicproject@gmail.org.
All right. Well, thanks for your time today, and thanks for coming out and protesting this war.
Thank you.
Anti-war protesters also gathered on November 9th in Houston, which is, of course, supposedly the heart of Bush country.
I'm out here to let people know what I think about terrorism. And the sign I'm holding says, stand terrorism. My definition of terrorism is the use of physical violence against innocent people for political gain. And I find it incredible that an administration that talks about a war on terrorism is committing some of the most atrocious acts of terrorism that I've seen in my lifetime. And I find it even more incredible that the United States public doesn't seem to understand that. And they're seeing this in such a one-sided way, not understanding that the life of a child in Iraq, an Iraqi child, is worth as much as the lives of our own children. That child is as dear to her parents as my children are to me. And they don't seem to have any worth in the minds of our governments, our leaders.
Yes, I'm here for the same reason. I totally deplore what's going on in Iraq. And I'm here to create the space for other people to stand up, to realize that actually we are in the majority. And most people don't want war. Most people don't want injustices. Everybody knows we're out there for the oil. We're occupying somebody's land for the oil. And I'm here just to create the space for other people to stand up, to just don't be afraid to speak up and be visible. We need to, the more visible we are, the more people will express themselves and the quicker this will happen. Just put signs on your yards, on your windows, you know, talk about it. You will see that most people around you agree with you.
Well, one of the posters I made is I'm kind of proud of. It says, bombing Fallujah to create democracy is like pissing in the wind in order to stay dry. This is such a self-defeating, from their point of view. And they are so incapable of seeing that, that they do it anyway. I mean, one of the things that's really interesting about what's happening is that the resistance, and we should call them a resistance, because that's what they are. And if it was happening in this country, if the Iraqis were invading this country and doing what we're doing in there, the people who were fighting back would be heroes, as they are, in fact, to most of the Iraqi people. But what's happened now is clear is that they are able to organize a nationwide response to the attack in Fallujah. The other thing is the ludicrousness of all of this being done to prepare for elections, or the notion that we're somehow going to give them democracy. You know, I mean, the people of Fallujah, they've already voted. They want the United States out. That's their vote. 90% of the population in Iraq, I'm told, from people who've been there, would vote the same way. You want to take a vote? Do that. That's what the will of the people of Iraq is. And so all this talk about democracy in that context is just really absurd. I think these people are literally insane. And what I mean by insane is not, you know, roving around foaming at the mouth. They are so divorced from reality that they cannot even accomplish their own ends, however rotten they are. They can't even accomplish them because they don't have enough grasp about how the world responds to what they do. They assume that they'll just continue to dominate it, and if that doesn't work, they'll dominate it some more. And that's what their strategy is here in Iraq. They want to crush the resistance. That's their thought, that they're going to somehow, you know, do so much damage to these folks that they're going to give up. It hasn't worked in Israel. It isn't going to work there. And I expect if they continue for four more years doing this kind of thing, we'll have the kind of situation here that the Israelis have.
On Wednesday, November the 10th, hundreds demonstrated at UC Santa Cruz for better wages and working conditions for members of American federal, state, county, and municipal employees at the 9 University of California campuses and 5 medical centers. AFSCME members serve food, clean bathrooms, dorms, labs, offices and hospitals, drive shuttle buses and park cars. Workers, UC students and others entered the bargaining meeting that was taking place, demonstrating that the community is committed to improving working conditions for UC service workers. The rally and bargaining meeting effectively demonstrated that AFSCME workers, UC students and members of the Santa Cruz community, including Marty Wormhout, the chair of the Santa Cruz County Board of Supervisors, and newly elected Santa Cruz City Council member, Tony Madrigal, are committed to improving the working conditions for service workers in the UC system.
Do my best to provide a positive work environment for myself, my co-worker. Therefore, if I provide a positive environment for myself and my co-worker, it's going to spread. My positive energy is going to spread to the students, you know. I keep a happy face at all times. And believe me, it's a challenge to feed when them kids come through in a three-hour period, over 1,000 strong. I'm hungry. Well, I'm glad you're hungry because that gives me a job. So, this is, you know, but it's hard to stay upbeat, believe me, when you have to work 7 days a week, hold two or three more jobs just to scratch out a living. The human body gets tired, it gets stressed out. There's no time for play, for family, for recreation. It's work, 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 and that's the way it is right now. So it's hard with so much happening in the world and just trying to scratch out a living here in Santa Cruz County, where the rents are over $1,000, it's a tough one. When you gotta spend, the gas goes up, dozen eggs goes up, loaf of bread goes up. I wanna give credit to where credit is due, and I'm just speaking on behalf of Food Service Department on this university. I am giving credit to management that has bent over backwards. They've taken us in, and we call it into this great big happy family. They was giving us training, they've given us, they want us to embrace the vision. They've given us WIT. What WIT stands for is whatever it takes, brother and sister, let's do it for the kids. And that's exactly what we're doing. Let there be no doubt in anybody's mind that we've got WIT in the food service department. And I'm sure the other departments have it too. Okay, now. The great Aztec gods above for you is that you will find the guidance and the wisdom to find the middle of the road, to find a common ground, to roll up them sleeves, because you have a monumental task in front of you, to find the courage to come to some hard decisions that have had to be made on both sides, and to make those decisions and let privileged few that make the decisions that impact our lives here down on earth, okay, let your courage be heard. As we're all in this together, we are the common worker that keeps this greatest state of the union functioning. I want to say this. What are you going to do to keep me motivated to stay upbeat? This is last month's pay stub for November, $955. I have to make do to make it through November. The holidays, Christmas coming up, and I got to provide for the little one. And that's who is impacting. Never mind me. Think of my little Andrea. That's why I'm up here fighting for a decent living wage. It's not to buy me a, you know, it is to provide for mine and my loved ones, okay? So in closing, I pray that the Almighty up above bless you and yours always. Thank you.
Thank you. We have some speakers that want to say a couple things from workers and students as well. I'm going to start. You can introduce yourself, fine gentlemen.
Mi nombre es Refugio Márquez. My name is Refugio Márquez. I'm a custodian. I'm working here for almost 18 years ago. When I started working here, I was very happy to be working here. The salary was okay. Now it's getting worse and worse and worse. Every time, every year, the state is fighting to cut all our benefits. So probably in the future, 5 more years, we're going to make $5 a day and no benefits, no doctor, no nothing. I've been working hard. I have 2 surgeries already. I messed up my back because I do hard work in here. Sometimes I have to do it for 2 people. And they don't care if I messed up my lower back or my hands or everything. They don't care, the people. So the state, all the time they are crying for money, it's no money. It's no money for us, the hard workers. But it's money for the big sharks. They have a big cake, yeah. So we want to share the cake. To give us good salary, good raise, and that's all I wanted. Share the cake. Go tell the big charge, please. We need money too. If they cry because they don't cannot make it for 400, 300,000 with free house and free everything, how come we gonna make it with 2,000 to pay rent, pay bills, pay gas and everything? Yeah. We have to fight for so long to get some raise. And when they increase the gas, the rents and everything, we don't make meetings like this. We pay, take it or leave it. So please, we demand respect with good salary. Thank you very much.
In San Francisco, 4,000 locked out hotel workers are negotiating to keep their health care and maintain fair wages. Flying pickets are held every Sunday evening starting at 7 p.m. at Powell and Geary Streets. The sound of the flying picket is what you're hearing under my voice. Basically, it's a couple hours long march to as many different hotels in the downtown area as possible where the workers are locked out, and joining the picket lines with the workers to show support and solidarity. Of course, the hotel workers are locked out in a struggle for health care and fair wages and bargaining power from their employers. On November 13th, locked out banquet waiters from the Palace Hotel gathered at their place of work to greet socialites who were arriving in formal attire. Our fearless correspondent Gino, armed with a baguette and microphone, reports from the front lines.
Oh, On Saturday, November 13th, the Garden Court at the Sheraton Palace was transformed into the Habsburg Imperial Court as the Philharmonica Baroque Orchestra holds its gala auction benefit, Vienna Galleria. Socialite guests arrived for the caviar bar. They were in formal attire and period costumes. Although the orchestra honored the picket line, the bourgeoisie still attended. Locked out local two banquet waiters who have worked this event in the past years gave the guests the welcome they deserved. The palace was transformed into a scene from the French Revolution with Jacobins, baguettes, and bad French accents.
Upcoming actions to support the workers include a rally this Saturday, November 20th at 11 a.m. at Union Square. And of course, there are flying pickets every Sunday at 7 p.m. at Powell and Geary Streets. On November 8th, Free Radio Berkeley held an open workshop on low-power television. If we were on Pirate TV right now, I'd be able to show you some of this equipment, but you'll have to use your imagination for this next segment.
Well, my name is Jack, and we've got two TV stations here, okay? And they both start at the same place. We've got two DVD players. We got little DVD player and big DVD player. Each system takes the audio and the video from the DVD player and plugs it into this modulator. And basically what the modulator is, it generates a signal, and then takes the audio and video inputs from the DVD player and applies it to that signal. So what you have when it comes out is you have a weak television signal coming out of the modulator. From here, it goes down this cable to our power amplifier. Now, the power amplifier takes a little signal and builds it up. It's various stages, and converts it to about 30 watts. This unit is so 30 watts out of here, and then from here it usually goes to an antenna. In this case, it goes to this heat sink, and then that's the complete system. For this one, the DVD player is plugged into this modulator. This one's set for channel 8. Takes a small signal from this modulator, goes into this amplifier where it's converted into a large signal. This is also 30 watts, and then it usually goes to an antenna, but it's going to this dummy low here, and that's the second channel. The only thing additional you need is if you're going to be running this from a residence or a business, whatever, is you need this power supply here to power the 13.8 devices, which are just really these amplifiers here. And the only thing you need is a power fan.
So ordinarily you'd run these on a battery.
But yeah, you'd run these on the car battery setup. If you're in a situation where you're in a portable situation where we're running on car batteries, you need something to power these 115 volt devices. So you'd need a converter, and they run fairly cheaply, 30, 40 bucks or something like that. Okay, here we have a portable setup. This is out of the back of a Toyota pickup. Power comes from, there's a main battery in the engine compartment. We also have two auxiliary batteries in the back of the truck here. Powering a station like this, I was getting about 20, 24 hours of battery life out of this situation. Also, what you have is the power inverter. This is over here. It's hard to see. And what it does is it takes the the 12-volt battery, 13.8 volts from the battery, and it converts it into AC power you'd have at home, 115 volts AC. And then here's the power strip that I was using for that. What I would have for my TV station is I'd have the DVD player here. That would be plugged into the modulator here. And then from the modulator, you take that small signal and you plug it in the amplifier, which would be here. And the amplifier connects at these two posts right here, where you get the 13.8 volts. From the amplifier, you plug it into this right here, this cable, and that takes it outside to the antenna. Here's the outside of the truck. From that cable that we were connected to, goes to here. You connect the antenna coax right here, and then right here, this is what usually where my antenna would be. You'd have like a 20-foot antenna here, it'd be weighted down here, and this unscrews, and the antenna fits right in here, held snugly, and up about 20 feet or so. And that's the full system. Here's an antenna that we were using for some broadcasting earlier. This one is we were using on channel 8. But it's adjustable. It started off as a channel 13 antenna, as you see, it's fairly compact for those channels.
So that's PVC and a couple of threaded rods.
Yeah, it's not complicated, but it's important you get the dimensions right. Yeah, it's impedance matches and things like that. The other thing we have is this is a UHF antenna we'll be using. This one is tuned for channel 23. And you can see it's much smaller.
You can get more information on Pirate TV at freeradio.org. These antennas that they're talking about are only a few inches long for the UHF models, and the VHF models are not much more than a foot long. So these are actually pretty small outfits that you could easily set up on your rooftop or car, or wherever you're interested in setting up a TV station. On November 3rd, there was a post-election protest in San Francisco for healthcare, not warfare, and Marie Harrison, an environmental justice organizer for Green Action, spoke at Justin Herman Plaza at the start of the march.
It's allowing our children and our grandchildren to die in front of us to send us a message. And that message is, you've been mistreating me, and I'm trying to tell you in the softest way I can, you have been mistreating me. We've been mistreating this earth. And how dare we attempt to go someplace else and tell somebody else how to treat their folks when we are the worst. We are absolutely the worst. There is no reason that we should have federal agencies who are constantly looking forward to telling you why they cannot do their job. I'm a mother and I'm a grandmother. And I'm telling you up front, I'm not a scientist, not even a doctor. I deal in common sense and logic. And when I can look around me and see that every third child that I walk into in Hunter's View has asthma, cancer, some type of skin rash, some type of pulmonary disease, that every other senior there is dying from asthma, cancer, some type of breathing or skin disease, there's a problem. There is a problem. And San Francisco needs to wake up and realize that it is not just the Bayview Hunters Point problem, okay? Bayview Hunters Point is only 3.5 miles of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco, you may not be at ground zero like we are, but baby, please believe me, what happens to me will happen to you, just a little bit slower. We have a president that has shown us that California means absolutely nothing to him. So every time he steps backwards and he sends another one of our sons and our daughters and our uncles and our cousins over to Iraq to die, we need to say, hey, you are not doing your job. And we need to confront those folks in those swing states who believe that we need to be over there killing somebody. There's enough killing going on right here. And I don't mean with the gang wars either. There's a lot of that, but we are being destroyed from within. We're being destroyed from within. This earth is dying. It's sending out a message, and you now know this for a fact because I told you. I have already warned you. this earth ain't gonna take no more. And knowing that, that little two-year-old baby is gonna be looking at every last one of us, and she's gonna have a right when by the time she gets to be 5 years old to say, what did you do? How did you stop this? You know, and I'm gonna be the one to say, hey, I stood on the front line. I went to jail. I protest. I went to City Hall and told them, I didn't hire you for this. I didn't bring you here for this. I'm gonna be the one to say, I stood up there and told this man who proclaims himself to be the president, you lead somebody else because you're leading everybody else into hell. I'm coming back home. I need to fight the war right here. He needs to bring our fellas home, our girls home, our soldiers. We need everybody right back here. We need to fight this war here. So we need to send that message even stronger now, okay? I am going to be looking forward to hearing from each and every one of you some kind of way, some kind of how, with a plan. Don't call me to say hi. Call me to say, I got a plan, and let's go do this, okay? So I thank you very much.
You heard the lady, folks. Let's go do this. So we all know that sentiment without action is the ruin of the soul.
This discussion onto the air here. Hey, do you want to talk about the Bulge?
Yeah, I want to talk about the Bulge. If any of you don't know the Bulge, there's a very good reason why you don't know the Bulge. It's because the media, the mainstream corporate media, is not reporting the Bulge. In my opinion, the Bulge is one of the most important things to have happened in the last 2 or 3 or 4 weeks. But I guess most of you still don't know what the Bulge is, so let's explain what the Bulge is. The story of the Bulge was broken at the end of October, and the journalist who discovered the story tried to sell it to his the LA Times amongst other big players, and they didn't pick up the story. The story of the Bulge is some guy noticed that in the first presidential debate with George W. Bush and John Kerry, there was something protruding from his back, which looked like some sort of bulge. Now, the president's aides dismissed it as a poorly tailored suit. However, the a photo of the bulge was given to a NASA scientist, who then analyzed it using very fancy computer wizardry and concluded that it couldn't possibly be a poorly tailored suit. The bulge was far too big, and also had was T-shaped with wires coming out of it. But that's really not the biggest hitter. The biggest hitter is that the bulge, even though it was apparently in this poorly tailored suit, was actually present in all three suits in all three presidential debates. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Even the town style debate. Like the town debate where we have like the public talking to it.
Was George W. Bush? Yeah. Okay, fine. I don't know about that one. It was definitely present at all three presidential debates, and it's been enhanced. The image, they've actually used quite sophisticated technology, enhanced it.
What do you think it was used for?
It was, well, it's people have watched the videotapes of that of those three debates again with this knowledge in hand, and it's funny, but you'll notice sometimes George W. Bush is asked a question, he pauses, and then suddenly comes cut straight in like that, as if he's been waiting for something or listening to something. And at one point he's asked a question, leaves a pause, and then suddenly says, but let me finish, like that, as if someone was talking to him. And it's really strange, and he leaves them the strangest pauses. He'll speak and then pause and then suddenly speak again, and it's all rather fishy. And if if you subscribe to the Bulge Theorem, as I do, I mean, it seems pretty convincing to me. You know, it seems absolutely obvious that you know, he's being fed the answers because he's an incompetent moron who can't speak for himself.
Do you think that occurred? It seems like when Bush speaks in public, he often pauses before answering questions. Doesn't he sort of take a while to digest and try to come up with an answer anyway?
Well, you're the voice of balance and reason, and sure, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's got to be taken into account. But when, I mean, the piece of evidence I said before for me is most convincing when he leaves a pause and then suddenly says, "Let me finish." You know, I mean, nobody was interrupting him.
I do remember that, and that was really kind of a creepy, big pause, and other people have brought that one up too. But the only thing I wanted to bring up, it was like there was that one question that during the town council meetings where a woman walked up to him, the president, and said, "Hey, you know, name an incident where you've ever done anything wrong." He really spun around for a long time for that too. Up with a joke this time around. It was just all it was just kind of a bitter answer.
Yeah, I think this whole issue for me brings up a lot of interesting questions. I mean, first of all, it's, you know, there's the issue of telling lies. The secondly, the issue of cheating, which is serious enough. I mean, he's now, you know, elected president by 3.5 million votes, and if some of the effect of that was through the debates, which most commentators concluded he lost anyway. But you know, if that did help him, then you know that's a fairly serious intrusion into democracy. But it's also interesting, why was this story not followed in the mainstream media? And ABC morning show actually asked George W. Bush about this issue, and George W. Bush answered it with one sentence, and then immediately the interview moved on to another subject. So
what did he say? What did he say as his answer in that?
It was the poor answer.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was it. They moved on. You know, that's your hard-hitting, cutting, probing journalism for you there. Oh, you don't want to answer the question? Oh, we'll move on then. We don't want to tax you now. Oh, sorry. Here's another track.
Well, from what I understand, there was going to be an exposé on that, but they decided it wouldn't be appropriate before the election.
Yeah.
So.
How about now?
Yeah, now seems like as good a time as any.
Well, it's interesting that the story was withheld on the grounds that it might interfere with the election result, which, I mean, let's think about it. Duh, you know, is you know, are people not meant to have full access to the facts and then to decide upon themselves? Is the media to decide what people are to know and essentially thus control to an extent how people vote? You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. That is, you know, the lamest answer I've ever heard for, you know, that is such a weak justification. It's unbelievable. So, I mean, we can follow the story now, but, you know, we've got George W. Bush for another 4 years.
Now that we got time to answer some of these questions, now we got the Fallujah that's distracting us now. It just seems like It's so convenient that all these things are timed. You know, of course.
Wait, you're saying Fallujah is a distraction for other greater stories?
Well, Fallujah is like it's a huge, but it was great timing for him to do that, so that he could distract from the election things too. I mean, it was something
I don't know.
Anyway.
I think that the election was a distraction from, you know, the whole apocalypse going on in Iraq right now.
I agree with that too. But it worked out. Doing it both at the same time means that the mainstream press can't concentrate on both things at the same time too. It's more resources.
It's a very well used technique to bury news when there's bigger news that came along. I mean, from a UK perspective, there's a very well known example of on September the 11th, 2001, the Transport Secretary in the UK emailed a colleague and said, have you heard about the attacks? Good time to bury good news, isn't it? ? And she got in pretty deep trouble for that. I don't think she resigned, actually, which, I feel she should have done. But, I mean, actually, this story, the bold story, is not actually really being covered now. I mean, you have to go online and you have to go to such places as fair.org, the media reporting, the people who check up on the media. Yeah.
But who doesn't have a blog these days? I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, every man and his dog seems to have a blog these days. I must be the only one. Heather, do you have one?
Not exactly.
Not exactly.
You have your friend's blog, don't you? You write on that, don't you?
IndieBay.org. That's Heather's blog. Well. Anyway, so that was the bold story, not being covered in mainstream media, like the most important things. It's on fair.org, yeah, which is an excellent resource, actually. That their analysis of the media is fantastic, and it's extremely well balanced. I mean, they're not a bunch of anti-Bushites at all. If you listen to their online, you can listen to some of their online stuff as well on Real Audio and MP3, and it's extremely balanced and fair.
Fair and balanced. Oh, that's funny. I came in kind of late today, but has anybody been talking about the black box voting?
Yeah, I did mention that they're doing recounts. Is that what you're... Or just about the electronic voting in general?
About that in general, and also I know Greg Palast is pushing on the fact that there's been cheating in Ohio and New Mexico is still being counted in Ohio and New Mexico right now. Diebold is settling.
Oh, right, that's another story.
Government worked out the details of that lawsuit with their lawyers and with Diebold.
Okay. Well, if only we had the computer,
million,
we'd have probably even more on that, but... So, what do you guys think about the new Bush cabinet that he's going to have the opportunity to put together with a rather friendly Senate? What do you think that's going to bring us?
We lost our colon today. We lost our colon. I'll drop that.
Yeah, lost another one.
So, yeah, there's other people that are on the fringes that that we hear that are going to happen. Potentially Rice will drop out, and
and there's also a shakeup at the CIA apparently right now.
I thought Condoleezza Rice was replacing Colin Powell.
Oh, that would be exciting.
Well,
that's
it may happen.
But we've still got Rumsfeld, haven't we?
Rummy is in play, yes.
Yeah, the one guy that everyone would most want to leave, is still in play. So let
I think Ashcroft is pretty in.
That's true. You can ram the Patriot Act up your ass, Mr. Ashcroft.
So what does a guy like Ashcroft do after being such a hated Attorney General and losing to a dead guy?
Becomes the singer.
there has been rumors, again, these are just rumors, that before the election that he would quit and potentially become a Supreme Court justice. So, you know, that's still maybe in play. So
that's going to be some fun stuff, let me tell you.
Yeah, yeah. But then there's the same rumors are being flashed about Colin, that would have been talked about with Colin Powell, which who isn't even a lawyer. And but they said that there's been that's not a requirement to be in the Supreme Court too. So it's kind of weird. I don't know how true that is.
Don't you have to have some sort of legal background to be a judge? One would presume you do. But Colin Powell is a 4-star retired military general. So I don't know. Do you just have to be friends with the president? Is that enough? Maybe the president's dog, which he newly. You know the president's got a new dog. Anyone know that?
No, I hadn't heard
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
Got all the big news.
Yeah, that was a new dog on the scene. So, I have no idea what the name is. It's I have no idea what dog it is. He bought it for his wife. Sweetie, isn't he indeed? Yeah, what a nice man. Yeah, why are there so many people leaving the cabinet at the moment? Is this I'm trying to find some sort of tactic or something strategic behind this.
They're probably doing it right now partly because of to offer some distraction from the ugly headlines from the Middle East, but I think it's pretty normal for the cabinet to quit.
Normal.
Is it?
Yeah, it's pretty normal for once a cabinet change, once an administration cabinet change, once an administration term is over. That people resign right after that, but it's usually not so many key. I mean, these are really key players. I mean, it's usually it's like you know somebody down like the Department of Labor, and then like one or two of the, like one. Like main player, but it seems like all these major players are being named as the people that are going to potentially be leaving.
And it's such a crucial time right now, too, for the Bush administration. You can't help but interpret it as being a political statement of some sort, you know.
Whatever happened to, the changing horses in midstream? What?
Well,
they've been doing such a fabulous job in the war on terror and, you know, the falling crime rate, I mean. It just seems like they've done such a great job. Why not step down?
Which sounds kind of nice. So, definitely. It's only $7 to get in, so it should be a good time. There's some cool prizes going around. Just want to send that shout out there. Yeah.
All right, it's time for us to vacate the studio, but one last announcement. Join us, that's right, Enemy Combatant Radio, and also Indie Bay, for a special screening of the documentary film about Baghdad on November 21st. About Baghdad is a journey into the hearts and minds of hundreds of Iraqis encountered by Sinan Antun, an exiled Iraqi poet who visited Baghdad in July 2003. In the simmering heat of Baghdad summer, Iraqis of various ethnic and political backgrounds and orientations spoke of past horrors and present fears. Check it out Sunday, November 21st at 7:30 p.m. at Station 40, 3030B, 16th Street, San Francisco. It's a $5 to $10 donation benefiting indiebay.org. And the rest of your local indie media center, including Enemy Combatant Radio. Thanks for listening. This is Pirate Cat, 87.9 FM, and we'll be here every Monday from 7 to 8 p.m. You guys want to sign off?
Yeah, thanks a lot for listening. We'll see you soon.
See you next week.
Bye.